Welcome back. You are listening to Nathan Hate on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Be sure to like the video and subscribe to the channel if you have not already. And with that, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Modern Vintage Gamer.
Hello, Nate. How are you doing? I'm doing very well. As you know, I just turned 51 last week, and I feel fantastic. And I'm very excited to be here and to talk about today's topic. So what are we doing here? What's happening?
Well, first, happy birthday and congratulations for crossing over to the other side of half a century old.
Feels good.
As people saw some of the pictures you have put up over the last week or so, people saying you are aging like a fine Greek wine.
Well, I appreciate that.
You don't look any older than 37.
Wow. Man, it gets younger and younger every time I hear that. But I appreciate the love and support. So thank you.
Yes, we have a very interesting episode to go over today, as Nintendo's 2024 has been a year of a lot of surprise, I think, for many people, as the year started off with a partner direct back in February. And of the three companies, I would say Nintendo is the one company where everyone is looking for a lot of answers, as Microsoft started off the year in January with their now annual Xbox Direct Showcase, where they really laid out their plan for 2024, where they gave us looks at Avowed and the first look at Indiana Jones. And then we have Sony, who was very vocal and transparent when they came out and officially said, we do not have a big release for this coming year. And that set off some alarms for individuals. But when you look at Sony's, I guess you'd say their development catalog and partners, they really don't have that many companies who would have a title ready for this year, but there's still a lot of anticipation for May, as that is the expectation for them to have a PlayStation showcase where we will get a new look at some of the games in their pipeline, as well as see if the rumors of a brand new Astrobot game coming later this year indeed have truth to them. And then we have Nintendo. We had the partner showcase. We've had an indie showcase. There was a lot of hope and anticipation that perhaps in the lead up to GDC, Nintendo would give a glint of hope and information regarding the Switch 2, as around that time, there was still an air that the Switch 2 could come out this year. But in the lead up to GDC, we had numerous reports come out that it was delayed to 2025. GDC came and went with no new information. And then over the last several days, there's been a large range of rumors, some suggesting that 2024 is still on the table, others really just talking about some more, generic information regarding the size of the unit and stuff of that caliber. But everyone is looking forward to when Nintendo will have their first general direct of 2024, as they are running out of games for this calendar year, with Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door release rapidly approaching, alongside Endless Ocean, and then Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon coming out in June. So everyone is kind of sitting on pins and needles, wondering what is next from Nintendo. And that is what we are going to talk about today. We have charted a full list of months where Nintendo typically has a heavy presence, be it with directs or some form of a convention or other presentation, and what we anticipate to see from Nintendo over the course of the next 12 months, yes, 12 months leading into early 2025, and what we think may happen in regards not just to the Switch, but also the Switch 2. And we are going to start with the month right around the corner, and that is the fabulous month of May.
In the month of May, well, we have the investors briefing.
Yes, we do have the investors briefing on May 7th. And on May 1st, which is a great Beatle, Bee Gees song. I don't know if you're familiar with that song.
I am. Bee Gees were originally from Australia. Did you know that?
I did. The Brother Gibbs. Mm-hmm. But yes, May 7th. Will be the investors meeting where Nintendo will outline in detail their coming or their current fiscal year, where they will give us their forecast for both hardware and software. And this will be a very unique situation, as typically Nintendo gives a better look into their future prior to a fiscal report in terms of software releases, whereas this year it appears as though we're not going to have that general direct take place before May 7th. And that's leading a lot of people to wondering how Nintendo is going to approach this and what does it mean for hardware. So there is definitely that expectation or hope that Nintendo is going to be discussing something about the Switch 2 as they lead up to this fiscal report. And I want to start with your opinion. Do you think this coming month for May is when Nintendo will maybe put out even a general statement, a blanket PR, similar to what we saw in April of 2016, where they just came out and said, our next gen hardware, currently codenamed NX, will release this fiscal year in the month of March 2017. Mm-hmm. Do you think Nintendo will do something similar here? Or could they potentially come into May, do their forecast for the fiscal year, and completely ignore new hardware?
You know, as much as I want them, Nate, to come out and say, make an announcement about their plans for the next generation of Nintendo hardware, as much as I think there is a lot of smoke around something like that happening, there's some history around that. Like you said, it's happened before. I'm going to stick my money on Mr. Furukawa being the safest Nintendo president of all time. And I think that there is going to be no discussion around next generation Nintendo hardware at this investors meeting. I think that information will be shared at a later date and we'll continue to go through the months and I'll give you where I think that will be. But to answer your initial question, no, I think this investors briefing, as much as it's going to annoy a lot of people, is purely going to be around the continued success of the Nintendo Switch with its very long tail that is continuing to sell extremely well, especially in Japan at this time. I think there's going to be more discussion around the existing games and commitments that they are currently working on getting out to their customers. And that's really where I see things. And obviously information about the up-to-date sales numbers, which I do think will be around that Nintendo DS mark, probably beating the Nintendo DS. But no, I don't think there's going to be any discussion around any next generation Nintendo Switch hardware. Tell me I'm wrong, though. Please tell me I'm wrong.
I would love to be able to tell you that you are wrong with any level of confidence, but I cannot. I think, in my estimation, if they approach this fiscal year forecast and they don't make any mention of next generation intent beyond what they have put out in the past, which was a very vague, non-specific chart with just 20XX at the end of it, if I'm an investor, I'm going to have some very serious questions for what is happening. Because we can look at the Switch and see its continued success. We can look at the software sales of how they are still selling hundreds of millions of pieces of software. But you also have to look at the stock price itself. It saw a significant dip when the news broke of a delay to 2025, which means investors are becoming a bit restless. Mm-hmm. They want to see something new. They want new energy and excitement to be injected into the Nintendo brand. And while Nintendo is still very profitable and they are still making a lot of money off the Switch itself, as an investor, you are looking into the future. You want to know the next big thing. And if Nintendo does go into May and they choose to be silent around anything in regards to next generation planning, I think investors are going to begin to really push them and ask some questions as to what are your plans for what is beyond the Switch. And they can't really just do a stump speech at that point. I think they have to acknowledge it, even if it is in just a very minor way. I'm not asking for a full-on reveal with a trailer and giving us a look at the model system itself. I just want that bare minimum acknowledgement that you are making a next-generation piece of hardware and that you do have a release window in mind. Because up to this point, Nintendo has refused to even acknowledge that there is a future plan beyond the Switch. And we haven't seen a console manufacturer really do this approach before at any point in the industry's history. We can look back at Sony or even Microsoft. They have always acknowledged that there are plans for new hardware, anywhere from 12 to 20 months before that product does see a market release. And with the PlayStation 5, they acknowledged it back in 2019. Then we began to see that slow marketing rollout, which happened, I believe it was around GDC or so of 2020, where they had the, what was it, the keynote about the 3D audio with the headset, and then we got to see the system itself.
Yes.
You also had the Instagram hype moment when they showed the logo, which was just PlayStation with a 5 after it, which everyone had anticipated, but it got millions of likes. They did a nice little rollout, and then as we approached that May window, we got a better look at the games, and then the summer came, and we got the pricing, we got the release date, and everything that goes along a launch of new hardware. So it still goes back to 2019 when they did announce that intent to have new hardware ready. Then you have Microsoft. They went to the Game Awards of 2019 to officially unveil the Xbox Series X. Then as 2020 went on, we got more and more information. They eventually had detailed the Xbox Series S several months later, and they gave all the pricing, launch games, etc. And then when you come to the Switch, we know Nintendo came out with the code name. They were very vague, very nondescript about what it was. April 2016, they gave us that release date of March 2017. And then we had to wait throughout the calendar year of 2016 to get that full-on reveal. And as the months went on, people began to get more and more impatient because we were getting to the tail end of the year. And it was, if this system's launching in 5 months, where is it? We need to see it. We need something if they are really going to launch in March. But they were able to give investors knowledge. They gave them information back in April to say, this fiscal year, we will have new hardware. Stay tuned. That's the type of acknowledgement I want from Nintendo at this point. And I understand a lot of things are going to go into them making that decision. The largest is the release timing of the hardware itself. Right now, we operate under the belief it is coming out in March of 2025.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. And that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
Yeah. I think you bring up some very compelling reasons for why Nintendo does need to acknowledge it and announce something. I'm going to stick to my guns on this and say it's not going to happen. I feel like because this happened last year and there were questions asked last year, and you know, Furukawa just very elegantly just kind of gave nothing responses. I think there's going to be nothing responses provided this year, maybe with a little bit more substance, or maybe with some tidbits that you can maybe read into a little closer. But beyond that, I don't think there's going to be anything at this meeting. We'll see.
I mean, I think one of the things that gives me pause of expecting anything in the month of May also comes from the idea that we haven't had that general direct yet of 2024, and we don't have a full look at Nintendo's intent of release for the second half of 2024. And without that there, it definitely makes me feel as though Nintendo wants to have that focus for the remainder of the year as best they can to be on the current Switch. They still have games they want to sell. They still have hardware that they want to sell. And it feels that maybe that's going to bring a little bit of hesitation, which brings us to the next point of the calendar year, and that's June. And as we know, at June, Microsoft will have their Xbox showcase to start the month. We have Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest. And then we have Nintendo, where they will roll out their annual direct, And ideally, this will be a general direct, though in the past, Nintendo has had partner directs in the month of June. But given we haven't had that general direct yet this year, I'd say the odds favor a general direct being in June because they have to date something after Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, because we have no other releases charted at this point, and there are definitely a few games waiting in the wings to be announced, like the Fire Emblem 4 Genealogy of the Holy War remake, as well as Metroid Prime 4, a game that continues to elude everybody as Retro just continues to work quite aggressively to get this game ready and have it available on the current Switch. But it feels as though maybe Nintendo could keep the Switch 2 close to their chest, go into June, have a general direct that still focuses primarily on the Switch itself and the games that will be available this calendar and fiscal year for that platform, and just let the Switch enjoy a little more time in the limelight.
Yeah, well, I mean, the June direct for me, I feel like is, you know, it's Nintendo. Nothing is ever set in stone, but it's about as close as of a lock to certainty as anything, really. As far as what we're going to see, I think you're right. There is going to be obviously a focus on the second half of this year and potentially stuff going into next year as well. Metroid Prime 4, I mean, how many times have we talked about this game, Nate? Does it even exist? I don't even know. We haven't seen any. we've seen a PNG file. That's what we've been given,
hey, with a rotating a damn good,
4 or whatever it was.
That was a damn good PNG.
We have seen absolutely zero from this game, and all of a sudden, you know, now is the time they're just going to just unveil it and be like, oh yeah, this game is ready and it's coming out this year for the holiday. Very, very hard for me just to imagine. But that's not to say it doesn't exist. Of course it exists. It's just I'm at that point now where it's we've talked about Metroid so many times in the past, it doesn't feel real anymore. But I'm going to stick to my guns. I think you're right. I think Metroid Prime 4 will finally get its time to shine this year, and it will be at this direct. And look, I think there's going to be some surprises as well. When I say surprises, I'm using air quotes. There may be the unveiling of the rumored Zelda double pack of games that we believe is in Nintendo's back pocket right now, waiting for the right time. I do think the focus will predominantly be Nintendo Switch related. Look, I don't know if we're going to hear anything about anything beyond that, especially where I basically just said that I don't think there's going to be any to talk about Switch 2 or next gen at the investor briefing. But it may also be an opportunity for them to, you know, start to unveil their plans for next gen. But again, I don't think that is the right venue to do that at a direct. I think the direct, this focus again, is on the Switch. And it's really about trying to shore up the holiday season so they can continue to sell tens of thousands, millions of copies of Mario Kart, Animal Crossing, Smash Brothers, all the evergreen titles that have been going so strong for them for such a long time, on top of any new games that they do announce that will come up, for the second half of this year.
See, part of me also wants to view June in a very nostalgic way of Nintendo going into a general direct in the month of June and having that E3 moment. Because you remember when E3, you'd have the companies unveil new hardware.
Yes.
And you didn't even necessarily have a trailer of a game or anything. You just came out with a mold and said, here's our next gen system coming out in 2025. Mm-hmm. Please be excited. And you had all the photographers, the media were taking pictures, and that's all the information you had. I wouldn't mind if Nintendo really went into June and just had that one last thing of, you know, a CG looking model of the Switch 2 and just have that generic coming 2025 at the end of it, just to give people something. And that's, you know, this is only saying if they do nothing in the month of May, now we're in the month of June, to do something like that. And it would generate a lot of hype, and it would definitely feel as though we're back in those E3 days. I remember when Nintendo came out in, I believe it was E3 2004, and they said, you want a revolution, and they took the Wii out of Iwata's jacket.
Yep.
And you had Metroid Prime 3 in the background in this very 5-second trailer looking thing that no one knew those are the visuals of the Wii at the time. And that was it. Didn't have the controller, didn't know anything about the system except its size. And it was enough to generate excitement. We had to wait several months before we got a look at the controller and the type of functionality it would have. And then it was a lot of wonder and mystery of how is this going to translate into modern gaming? And we all know how well it ended up doing. But that's how companies used to approach console announcements. Now it's far more conservative. It's far more curated in how they approach things. And that kind of brings us into the following month, which would be then July. And we don't have Nintendo's full investors relations calendar available at the moment. But we know around the month of July and August is when they would have their quarter report. And if we look back on history, Nintendo did have product like the Switch Lite. That was announced, I believe it was in June, or was at, and then you had the Switch OLED, which was announced in July.
Yep.
And these were very just out there announcements. It was just a tweet. Like, here it is. Now, these are different. These are revisions as opposed to brand new hardware. So we can't really look at them to be indicative of how Nintendo could approach a hardware announcement. But we can look at them to say Nintendo isn't shy from just going to social media and making an announcement. But the Switch 2, I don't think they're going to be that that nonchalant of just waking up a late June, early July morning and finding a tweet saying, oh, here's the Switch 2. It's coming out next year.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is where things start to get a little fuzzier for me as far as what I think the right timing is around a possible announcement. But yeah, I mean, look, these months, other than the kind of the financials you mentioned, I don't know. Like, there may be something that may come up in August that is announced, that was announced in June potentially. That could certainly happen. But yeah, we're getting to the point now where we're starting to throw some darts at the dartboard, I feel, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, once we get into the month of August, this is a very busy month in terms of the industry, as we do have Gamescom, and Nintendo will have the, they have PAX East, and you also have Nintendo Live, which will be in Sydney, Australia this year, and we already know Nintendo is foregoing having a presence at Gamescom, and this is not an uncommon thing for them. This is nothing that individuals have to read into. So in the month of August, it still just comes down to that point of, will Nintendo do anything here, even if it is just a social media drop? And again, it really comes back to the main point of, when is the system truly launching? And as we said, we're operating under the condition that this is coming out in March of next year, and that's the only timeline we have. So with no presence at Gamescom, and really Nintendo Live being a family affair where you come and gather, look at the current Switch games.
Yep.
And the fact you have to sell tickets in advance, you know, the Switch 2 isn't just going to have a demo station there to surprise people, because you'd have a lot of angry media and a lot of angry potential customers saying, well, I didn't buy tickets because the only things you were advertising was Mario Kart 8 and Mario on NSO. So I didn't want to buy a ticket. And now you're telling me the Switch 2 is there? Like, wait a minute, you can't do that. I remember last year going into the Nintendo Live event for Seattle, where people were saying, oh, the Switch 2 is definitely going to be there, because they're not giving full details, as it's a public event they sell tickets to. They're not just going to drop a surprise thing on people like a brand new system.
Right.
But that brings us to September.
Well, before you talk about September, why don't you explain to people, because some people may be confused about the Gamescom absence, because there are a lot of people that think that means something more than what has been said. And there are some articles I've read that people are saying Gamescom has been canceled because Nintendo is preparing themselves for next generation. So why don't you give your your very, very good opinion on why Nintendo is not turning up to Gamescom this year, which I agree with, by the way.
When you look at something like Gamescom and its history with Nintendo, Nintendo's really never prioritized Gamescom as a venue to do demos or even just attend in general. But they were at Gamescom last year, and one of their priorities of being at Gamescom last year was to meet with European development studios and partners. And as the reports came out very quickly following Gamescom, Nintendo and some other partners did do technical demonstrations of the capabilities of the Switch 2, where they saw demos of Zelda Breath of the Wild, The Matrix, and others. And without that need to meet with development partners again at a venue like Gamescom, I don't think you have to attend this year. You already met with the partners that you prioritize in European studios. And eventually, essentially, Gamescom is the European equivalent of GDC. And we just had GDC earlier this year. And that's where North American development partners would meet with Nintendo, get briefed on upcoming plans and such. And then you have Tokyo Game Show, which is the Japanese equivalent. So with the hardware coming out, let's say in March of 2025, it means you've met with the European partners of priority. You've given them that briefing. You don't need to meet with them again this year, especially if the system is coming out in a 6 to 8 month window following that event. You've already met with them. You've given them the briefings. You have relayed the information that you had to relay to them, be it dev kit timing or what, you know, whatever. And you don't have to be there. There's no benefit to being there again in 2024. You want those studios to be busy working on launch games and launch window games for your platform, not to be meeting with you just so you can regurgitate the same information that they already know. And that's why I didn't view that news of Nintendo skipping Gamescom as anything significant. Yeah. It's not a venue that they need to be at. They already did what they had to do at Gamescom 2023.
Yeah.
And you also have to factor in, they may be a little bitter about the leaks that followed.
I think so. I think that there's definitely some that would factor into their plans, where they're like, well, you know, last year was a bit of a mess. Things kind of leaked out. So let's just put a lid on it for this year, and we'll reassess where we are maybe next year or whatever. But I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Gamescom definitely served its point last year as far as, you know, studios getting that time with Nintendo, seeing the technical demonstrations and getting an idea of what the Switch 2 is capable of. And Nintendo just doesn't need to be there again this year. And that, you know, brings us into September, where we do have the Tokyo Game Show, and we typically have Nintendo have another Nintendo Direct to fully flesh out their holiday lineup, as well as give a glimpse into the early half of the coming year, so early 2025. And by September, if the system is to come out in March of 2025, I feel like by now we have to know something about it, whether it is just that general acknowledgement that I expressed should be given to them in that May timeline, or something more substantial, maybe closer to what we got with the Switch, a full-on trailer, which came in October. But by September, I think Nintendo really needs to have disclosed something to the public, to give them, you know, just a bit of information to grab onto, to have confidence that, hey, Nintendo's going to have something. You can't stay silent in the lead up to the holiday. You have to give tangible evidence, tangible news and substance for the consumer base to say, okay, I can't wait. Nintendo has something just around the corner. Yeah, we have these games to look forward to this holiday, be it like Metroid Prime 4 or Fire Emblem, a Zelda game, whatever. But we're looking over the horizon to what's next. And you have to, by September, something has to be relayed.
Yeah. So this is where I do obviously start to, you know, agree with what you're saying and what their plans are. I do think that if we start getting to September and there's been zero communication, then that's kind of telling me that, you know, we need to move quickly and get some more information as soon as possible. But if the month of September comes and goes and hey, and we've heard nothing, then all of a sudden that March, that kind of, you know, March date that people are throwing around may not actually be the date, right? And that's where things get a little interesting. But I do think, and I do agree, that going into the holiday, if we're in September, we really need to start to get some communication from Nintendo about what their next gen plans are. And I know we're going to talk about October here in a sec, but yeah, look, I could definitely see, you know, plans being discussed in September and then a trailer drop in October, kind of very similar to what they did with the Switch in, you know, all the way back all those years ago. I could definitely see them coming out with a trailer for October potentially. But yeah, I mean, I do agree. September is, you know, if September comes and goes, Nate, then man, I don't know what to say, but I do think we'll probably hear something around that time.
Yeah, if September comes and goes with just pure silence, and I'm talking as though there has been no announcement made up to this point, I think we then have to begin to look at
the early
2025 release and reassess and say there's no way it's coming out in this fiscal year,
right?
Because Nintendo by now would have relayed this to partners and investors, because investors want to be able to invest again on that excitement and on that anticipation of growth. They want to put their money in to make more money. And if you're silent, they're not going to invest with any sense of confidence. So if September comes and goes with no acknowledgement, then I would say early 2025 is definitely out of the window in terms of release possibility. But the curious thing is, if they have acknowledged the system in the earlier half of 2024, and we're getting into September, and I know with the Switch, we had the trailer in October, but you also have to look at the Wii, where they went into the Tokyo Game Show and gave us the first look at the Wiimote. And they did a demonstration where they had Metroid Prime 1 be revamped with Wii controls just to illustrate what you could do. They had Wii Sports on display. That if there is a meaningful gimmick with the Switch 2, I wonder if Nintendo would use Tokyo Game Show as a venue to demonstrate some of this. And again, this really is based on when the system comes out.
Yeah.
If it's March, they could definitely hold it and try to replicate exactly what they did with the Switch of, hey, we could do a trailer around Tokyo Game Show or the direct that we usually have in close proximity to the Tokyo Game Show. And then we're going to do something more significant in early 2025, exactly like what we did with the Switch in 2017. So I would say, be it September or October, for a trailer and a deeper look at the system itself is really interchangeable. It just comes down to which month Nintendo feels as though would give them better, I guess, mind share within the gaming community, be it September or October. And I would say you'd really have to look at holiday lineups, not only from Nintendo, but also Sony and Microsoft. And we know what the holidays are looking like for Sony. We know the PlayStation 5 Pro is going to be something later this year. It's just a question of which month is the platform going to be released, and when is Sony really going to begin the marketing of that specific piece of hardware? Are they going to mention it in May, or is this something they're going to hold until later this summer? Then we have Microsoft, who has kind of implied and teased that they have hardware as well this year, though it won't be quite as significant as a PlayStation 5 Pro. But they do have some pretty big heavy hitters in terms of software with Avowed, Indiana Jones. So if you're Nintendo, you're probably going to try to prioritize a month that's going to have a little less competition than going up some significant releases, even something like Call of Duty. You're going to try to find a quieter, weaker month where you could really just come out and say, here's a Switch 2 trailer, because we want that publicity for the better part of the next 2 weeks or so. And we don't want to have that competition with our competitors. So I'd say September or October are interchangeable. And that brings us into early 2025 with January.
January,
start of a new year and new hope, new expectations, new predictions videos for the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
And if Nintendo wants to do that one-to-one with what they did with the Switch, they would have a significant event where you would have hands-on with the Switch 2. If it's coming out in just a couple of months, you're going to detail it. You're going to show that launch lineup. You're going to give us pricing information on all the accessories, controllers, hardware, everything that you need to know. And again, it comes down to, when is the system coming out? If it's not in March, then January is just going to be a nothing month.
Yep. Yep. That's the thing. I mean, I feel like we're playing some dominoes here, right? Like if something happens in September, then I think we're good for January. But if nothing happens, like we said, if it comes and goes, then we just have to basically, you know, reassess, you know, that whole kind of roadmap. But I think the roadmap itself wouldn't change as far as the actual duration between announcements. It's really that window would just get kind of pushed a little bit further down, you know, by a matter of months, maybe 6 months or 3 months or X number of months. But yeah, I mean, I think January is a really good month. I think it, you know, if there indeed is an announcement this year, as we have planned, that we would hear something by September, potentially, you know, investors are briefed, you know, as per you on in May. I think January is a great month to have that demonstration, you know, thing that they did like last time. I think that's really good. And so it's a month where people are just getting back into the groove. People are traveling. There's always going to be opportunities for Nintendo to go around and you know, and show this stuff off. So, look, I think January is probably going to be the same if that's what happens.
I want to introduce a little bit of anarchy to this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say Nintendo is silent. We're now in January. Nintendo comes out in January, has a trailer, does the presentation, announces an event a couple of weeks later, Switch 2, and they say it's coming out in March. How annoyed would you be as an investor that they just kept a secret for the first 10 months of your fiscal year and they're going to try to drop a shadow release? Though, I mean, realistically, there'd be so many leaks from various partners, manufacturers, accessory makers, etc., leading up to that point, that would be near impossible to pull a Sega situation here. But how annoyed would you be as an investor that Nintendo tried to pull something like this? Not even just an investor, but also as a consumer. Because let's just say you have to budget yourself month to month, and you know, October or 2024 has come to a conclusion, and you said, you know what, Nintendo hasn't announced the Switch 2 in any capacity. I'm going to go out and I'm going to spoil myself. I'm going to buy a PlayStation 5 Pro for $700. Mm-hmm. I don't need it, but I'm going to do it because Nintendo doesn't have anything. And then a few weeks later, they say, oh yeah, it's coming out in 2 months. And you say, well, I just bought that PlayStation 5 Pro. I don't have the extra $400, $500 now to buy a Switch 2. Thanks, Nintendo.
Well, I think there would definitely be a section of investors / customers that would be annoyed about that. But it all depends on what Nintendo shows us. If they do indeed come to the table with a really great piece of hardware that not only is an evolution from the Switch, where it does in fact enhance the current Switch hybrid model with, you know, a bigger screen, higher resolutions, better frame rates, more power, you know, better Joy-Cons or a better control method, you know, nothing that drifts, you know, irons out all the kinks from the original model and offers not only that, but, you know, some unique and interesting take on the Switch hardware itself. We'll just call it the gimmick, whatever that may entail. People, you know, if people see that, people can forgive. You know, a lot of people, they see a nice new shiny toy, and even though it's only a matter of months after, you know, they invested in a PlayStation 5 Pro, I think some people would be like, okay, I see what you're doing. And on top of that, if they have a compelling lineup of launch titles that does, let's say, include a 3D Mario game and potentially a new Mario Kart game, I think that's enough to be like, all right, Nintendo, we get it. You know, you've been kind of waiting, you know, for all this to be ready before you gave us the right time to unveil it. So we will give you a pass on this. But there's still going to be people that are going to be upset by it. I absolutely agree with you. But look, I think if Nintendo does have the hardware and the games, then that disappointment, that frustration could be mitigated.
Yeah, I mean, people definitely invest based on hype. And if they come out with a huge launch lineup, let's say a 3D Mario game or something of that capacity, people are going to look at it and say, wow, look how good that game looks. I don't care if you only gave me 12 hours to get a pre-order in and go pick it up at the store. I'm going to make this a reality. I need to experience that. But one thing I do want to touch on is that from a development standpoint, what type of timeline would you just say, in your opinion, that a partner would want to have from Nintendo in terms of officially announcing the hardware ahead of its release point? Because this would affect the scheduling of games within that, I'll say, launch window, which is typically given to games in the first 90 days of the system, not in the immediate launch, but in the first 3 months. Mm-hmm. So just in a development opinion, how far in advance would you want Nintendo to acknowledge their next generation plans, just to give partners, not even necessarily with access to a dev kit,
right,
just a partner with intent to eventually bring a game to the platform so they can begin to court Nintendo with projects that they have in their studios and potentially get a dev kit,
right,
to have that knowledge of saying, okay, we have 9 months of when the system is coming out, just as an example, to say, okay, now we have that window of expectation. Let's get this game to a certain state so we can show Nintendo a vertical slice and hopefully get a dev kit so maybe we can have something there. So yeah. What timeline would you be looking at?
It's very difficult to answer because obviously it depends on the scope of the project, being undertaken or being considered for that, whether that is, a remaster or a port of an existing game or, bringing a new game to new hardware. But generally speaking, I will give you an answer. It's probably about 12 months. Mm-hmm. I'd say about 12 months. 9 months you mentioned, that's also possible. It does depend on the scope of the game, but usually, when you do take on, new hardware, there's obviously some learning that needs to go on as far as, learning how the dev kit works and getting up to speed and familiarized with documentation and all that stuff, right? So there's going to be a little bit of a time to, we'll say, ramp up on the new hardware and how it works and everything, getting familiarized with, the code base and everything like that. So there is a window of time there, but I wouldn't say any more than 12 months personally. I think, and even 12 months is probably on the longer side as well, but we'll say 12 months to kind of fit most, but not all, scenarios.
Yeah, especially with a lot of indie studios out there today, and some of them are only a handful of people, so they could potentially be on the lower end of a Nintendo dev kit priority ladder.
Right.
And may not even be on Nintendo's radar, but they could be developing a game for the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, and they could be, very adamantly working on the project saying, it's too ambitious for the Switch. But once they announce the Switch 2, I would love to be able to set up a meeting with them, show them what I'm working on so I can get access to a dev kit. And by being silent, you are putting certain potential partners kind of on the wayside because they aren't reaching out to you. They can't communicate with you if you are Nintendo because they're just like the public. They don't have access to any of this information if Nintendo isn't being forthcoming and sharing it with them. And because they are a small indie studio, they're just not on their radar. And as being that indie studio, you don't have that pull of being able to get that meeting with Nintendo because you're still really nobody, but you'd love to be able to put your project on that platform if information was publicly available and official. So yeah, 12 months definitely fits the timeline that we have seen from other platforms going throughout history.
Yep.
So like right now, if we were to use, just as that 12 month thing, and this would definitely be a doomsday scenario, I would say, if we were to use that as a baseline, do you think, just in your opinion, we could see this, the Switch 2 potentially come out in the early summer, late spring of 2025, and maybe not make the coming fiscal year? And I want to emphasize, this is not based on anything. This is just a conversation talking point of doomsday.
Yes, I can indeed see that potentially happening where it doesn't, March 2025, is a date that's been going around because it seems to fit well, right? It seems to neatly kind of fit into that slot where it's like at the end of the fiscal, you know, and it's going to be all guns blazing, you know, next fiscal with new hardware, and everything is neat and not you know, neatly wrapped up with a bow. But this is video games, you know. It's like you said, it's something that doesn't always kind of work out the way that you want it to or you think it's going to. And, you know, video games, it's not a one size fits all approach. You know, some get done in a matter of months, some get done in a matter of, you know, 5 years, right? It's just one of those things. So I think there is a likelihood, you know, some likelihood, I'm not saying it's big, that we could see this system, you know, get kind of moved out to, let's say, the middle of next year, summer 2025, right? It all just depends on this year and what we hear from this year. Right. So, yeah, if we're in that situation, Nate, where September comes and goes, like you said, then maybe that summer 2025 isn't as unreasonable as what people may think, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, to your point, maybe, you know, there is some chance that they could announce something and then move on it fairly quickly as well, because they have a lot of confidence in the new hardware and they have a stellar library of first party launch lineup games that they know are going to absolutely, you know, dominate their sales. But we're just going to have to wait and see. I'm sitting on the fence on this one because I just don't know. We have September is like the most pivotal month of this year, I feel like, for Nintendo.
Yeah, it really comes down to when they are able to relay that first piece of information regarding the system. And, you know, May is that first real opportunity. If nothing happens in May, you know, June, which this is why we constructed the episode the way we did, of going through these key moments in the upcoming year of when Nintendo could relay information. And if they relay the information, the impacts it would have on the remainder of the fiscal year, because if they give the information out earlier in the year, you have that confidence that the system will be out in the current fiscal year, concluding in March of 2025. If as the year gets deeper and deeper and we're not getting that basic acknowledgement, you have to begin to look at the fiscal year saying, is this really in play? And September seems as though to be that point of no return in terms of communicating a release for this fiscal year. So it's going to be a very interesting rollout of how the year approaches. This is either going to be something that we see addressed in the very near immediate future, or it's going to be something that we are just sitting on pins and needles, waiting month to month for something to happen. So it's really up to Nintendo when they want to begin to communicate their plans regarding the system. The sooner the better. It's just a question of, is it going to be sooner and will it be for the better?
We'll have to wait and see.
But with that, we go to some of the Streamlabs questions we have accumulated this month. And the first one comes from South Coast Horizon, who donated $3, and they write, you know, there are people who are still very much into an active piracy scene for the Nintendo Switch. I would say that scene is more about game preservation than anything. However, Nintendo practices haven't been smooth sailings as of late.
I don't agree that the Switch piracy scene is about preservation at this time. But I will agree with you once the Switch is no longer the current generation hardware. I do think that, you know, with this MIG Switch stuff and these cartridge dumpers and all these things that are out there, preserving the Switch library is absolutely essential. Like every other system that's come before it, it requires these ROMs to be, you know, dumped and made available. But I have a hard time believing that right now, when we talk about the Switch and we talk about the emulation scene and the ROM scene, that we're talking about preservation. We're talking about piracy. We're talking about emulation at this point. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, because I don't think anyone really has to rush out there and preserve Tears of the Kingdom. Now, have there been cases of games that absolutely need to be preserved in preservation? Yes.
Mario All-Stars.
Yep. Mario All-Stars. Absolutely. Fire Emblem. There are definitely exceptions to this rule, but the vast majority of the Switch library doesn't need to be preserved in the month in which the game is released.
Cooking Mama. That's another one, right? Didn't they get pulled?
Did they ever fully pull the game? Because they found what, like malware or something, or a crypto scam in the game?
Some type of Bitcoin miner in there? Because apparently like it was running really hot the whole time or something. I don't know about that one. I have to look at that.
Yeah, there was something like that. I remember because people were like, oh, you got to buy the game before they pull it from shelves. It's going to be really valuable. I think the game's worth less now than it was. Then had a follow-up donation from South Coast Horizon of 222. I've been saying for years now that the next successor to the Nintendo Switch will be coming out in spring 2025. I think people need to relax and calm down and just be patient. Build the backlog while we wait.
Well, I do agree with you on this one. I think spring 2025 is a pretty good time. We'll have to see.
Then had a follow-up from South Coast Horizon of 370. That being said, I have a very important question worthy of some serious discussion. Hasn't anyone noticed how the PC world and the console world have intermingled? Has anyone noticed the success of the Steam Deck? In my opinion, it is truly the next gen.
You know, I agree with you on this as well, South Coast Horizon. The Steam Deck, I've had mine for a while now. I think I've had mine for about a year or a year and a half. And I'm starting to use it more and more in my kind of daily routine when it comes to playing video games. Initially, I kind of just disregarded it as just another handheld that I could load, you know, Dolphin and play ROMs on, which was kind of cool for a while. But I'm slowly starting to understand how PC games can be run on a handheld device such as the Steam Deck. And I'm on board with it. I think it is a very interesting product. I do think Valve is going to continue to support it for many years. They're going to iterate upon it. They're going to release updates on the hardware. So yes, I do think bridging the gap between gaming, between PC and console is definitely happening with the Steam Deck. And I like the Steam Deck. And I will say, it does make me second guess my purchase choices when it comes to games that run on the Switch versus games that run on the Steam Deck. It's not always a automatic, I'm going to buy the Switch version and play it, you know, on handheld. If there is a superior PC version that runs very well on the Steam Deck, then sometimes I actually buy that version instead. So it's definitely kind of making its impact on myself, and I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'd say even the PC world and console world have intermingled with just the PlayStation 5 and Xbox really feeling more and more like PCs. But beyond that, you also have Microsoft doing day and date games with their Xbox Game Studio games, and you have Sony bringing their games to PC, you know, 6 months, 12 months after the PlayStation 5 release, or in the case of Helldivers 2, day and date. So in a way, I think you could make the argument that the PC really is that super platform. You get Xbox games, you get Sony games, you get third-party games, you get Square Enix and Atlus now supporting PC more, you know, more heavily than ever before in the history of PC gaming. So PC is definitely becoming more of a viable platform. And I say that as an individual who has loathed and despised PC gaming, because when I was growing up, PC gaming was a very specific type of game. It was a lot of RTS games.
Yep.
You had some first-person shooters, but you were really limited to just the, you know, QWERTY type of keys or in control style. And you could tell, you could look at a first-person shooter or really any type of game and say, that looks like a PC game. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking games like Unreal Tournament.
Yeah.
You could look at that and say, that looks like a PC game because it looked and ran so differently than a console first-person shooter. And now you really don't look at something and say that looks like a PC game outside of a few select genre types, because now we're really in a more of a uniformed gaming world. And you know, that's a good thing for gamers at the end of the day. Then had a follow-up from South Coast Horizon of 370. So then, where do we stand in terms of video game console experiences, physical game ownership, game preservation, live service, and the future and the video game industry? Take your time to unpack this one.
All right, I'm gonna just blast it out really quickly. I'm a big fan of game preservation. I tolerate live service games. What were the other things he was asking about?
Physical game ownership.
Oh, I'm a big proponent of physical game ownership. As you know, it's the only true ownership, in my opinion, that no one can just walk into your house and take from you and say, nope, we delisted that game, so that is no longer yours. That obviously just does not apply in that universe. And there was another one. What was the last one?
The future of the video game industry.
The future of the video game industry, I feel like, is going to move into an all digital future with a lot of live service games. There's going to be a lot of stuff that just does not appeal to me. And honestly, I don't know if I'm going to be around for it. As far as, am I going to continue to be as passionate about video games in 10 years as I am today? I don't know the answer to that. We'll have to wait and see what the future holds. Give me yours, Nate.
Yeah, future of the video game industry is definitely one of, I say, great uncertainty. If I had to sit here today and give my predictions of what I feel as though the future of the industry is going to be, I think there's going to be a lot more collaboration between the three console manufacturers as exclusives begin to become unprofitable in terms of long-term success, where you have to have Xbox games, Sony games, even Nintendo games on every single platform there is, on every screen there is, because I think the industry is essentially going to consolidate in a significant way where they all have to rely on each other to survive in the industry. And there's just going to be a lot of consolidation. I'm not saying that's going to happen in the next 5 years. It could take 15, 20, 25 years. But I think that is the future of the industry, that you're not going to have three platforms in the way you have it today. You might have three, four, or five brands that you can buy, but ultimately, at the end of the day, 99% of the software lineup is going to be identical.
Yep. And that is, for me, that is very disappointing. Because
the gaming best, needs that unique.
Exactly. The best video game generations were when all the hardware was unique to the hardware maker. Like the PlayStation 2 ran a certain architecture. The Xbox ran x86. The GameCube ran PowerPC. The Dreamcast ran, you know, SH2. These were completely different constructed game consoles. It had really nothing in common between each of them other than, you know, a controller. And all those systems had unique and amazing experiences individually. And I think, and I made a video about this, you know, a couple of weeks ago that was titled Old Games Were Better. And I kind of talk about why old games, you know, were better, because they took advantage of the target hardware that they were being developed on with their unique features. And, you know, having video games turn into a landscape where I can play this Xbox game, this Xbox developed game on a PlayStation, on my PC or on my Xbox or via xCloud, something is lost there, or vice versa. If Sony starts to bring their experiences to more experiences to PC, and let's say they start to use Xbox, you know, Game Pass as a place where they can bring their games onto, then if you've got all these games available everywhere all the time, it's too diluted for me. I feel like, mm-hmm. you know, that's something that I'm not really interested in.
And it's funny how you said, you know, the only thing they had in common was you used a controller. Mm-hmm. And even then, the controllers were all different from each other.
Absolutely. Like, very different.
You look at a DualShock 2, you had the pressure-sensitive buttons. You had the GameCube controller with a D-pad that was essentially meaningless, but you had the Z-trigger. You had the big A button because that was supposed to be the focus of, you know, the way you interacted and used the controller. Then you had the Xbox controller with the black and white buttons. Mm-hmm. It's... everything was different. And I would say that unique element of game controllers began to cease after the Wii. The Wii was really the last true I'd say controller innovation, and people will argue, say, oh, the DualSense has haptics, while nice, isn't really that big of an innovation.
Right.
At the end of the day,
it's complementary.
You're playing the game. Yeah, the way you play the game is still ultimately the same as you were doing on a DualShock.
Correct.
Back in the day, it's just the feedback you're getting is different. So we're not having that unique, you know, experimentation in the way we're interacting with the games anymore, because everything is becoming more uniform. And that's kind of, I'd say that's an adverse effect of focus group testing. You want to have something familiar to everybody where, hey, we want you to be able to just pick up a controller and play. Well, everyone's familiar with this form factor, so that's what we're going to make. And you can even look at PlayStation during the PlayStation 3 generation, where Nintendo comes out with a controller with gyro. And what was Sony's immediate, you know, their immediate response? Let's add gyro to the six-axis controller. And here's a terrible demonstration of Warhawk. And it was like, this is so reactive that you saw something innovative and possibly game-changing that you immediately had to respond and try to implement it in your controller to show some form of innovation. And then immediately, you know, basically forgot about it. And even today, the DualSense has gyro. How often is it utilized?
Right. It's,
you know, it's not.
One in every 10 games, maybe, has some form of haptics.
And that's the thing. Like, the way we used to, and even the shapes of the systems, the operating systems, the media format, not even that was shared across the board. I mean, you had mini discs on the GameCube.
Yeah.
And then everything became, let's make everything a DVD player.
Had mini discs on the GameCube. You had some weird GD-ROM format on the Dreamcast. You had DVD on the Xbox. And you had, well, I guess you had dual-layer DVDs on the PS2.
Yeah.
It was just all over the place.
Like, the PS2 was interesting because some games were still on CD.
Yes, that's right.
And others were on DVD, and you could tell when you flipped them over if you had a blue disc bottom or if you had a DVD.
It's the same thing with the Dreamcast, and that's what ultimately led to the Dreamcast getting hacked was the CDs that were running on the laser.
Because you could just download the ROM and burn it.
Yep.
Burn a CD on your computer, pop it into your Dreamcast, and play the games. And one of the big emulators on the Dreamcast was... what was the Nintendo emulator that you just put in the boot disk?
Not Bleem?
Yes, Bleemcast.
Yeah, Bleemcast. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, gaming, I think the future is just going to be something very sterile.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
The age of innovation and unique personality is behind us. Well, not behind us, but I think as time advances, it's going to become an antiquated element. Then had a dollar donation from Gideon. Now that the dust has settled, what was the real story with the fabled Switch Pro? Did a new Switch with faster hardware actually exist at one point and come close to releasing? Or was it the Switch OLED all along?
What do you say?
I still stand by the information that I put out there years ago, that Nintendo was looking to do a Pro. I know John Linneman of Digital Foundry had also repeated that there were Pro intents. I believe it was late last year or so where he reiterated it once again. I mean, Bloomberg had reported it. Nikkei had reported it.
Too much smoke. It absolutely existed in some fashion.
I mean, projects do exist and get canceled. You can look at Project Atlantis.
Yep. Yep, take a look at the Giga Leak and see all the iterations of hardware Nintendo was kind of working with. A lot of this stuff never saw the light of day. I mean, to me, you know, from my understanding, the Pro was a thing. I don't know how long and what ultimately led to it getting, you know, shelved, but there was definitely some smoke around the Switch Pro.
Then had a dollar donation from Grace. Hi, Nate and VG. Do you have any thoughts why Sony hasn't ported Bloodborne to PC yet? It seems crazy that they don't ever seem interested when so many people are clamoring for it. Could it be some kind of contract issue between Sony and FromSoft?
Oh, I got some thoughts around this. A lot of thoughts about it. I don't know why it's hasn't been ported either. It seems like you know, when FromSoft gets asked about it, they basically say, we can't talk about it. And that's right, because it doesn't belong to them. Obviously, it belongs to Sony. I don't really know the answer. I mean, Lance McDonald, obviously, he has his patch that's out that's literally like a one-line code change or a... It's not that small, but it's a very, very small change to open up the frame rates. I don't really know why. Sony obviously has their own thoughts and ideas about Bloodborne that obviously none of us are privy to. I don't think there's any technical reason why this couldn't happen. It's just a matter of, is Sony planning on doing it? And if so, when? We always hear so much rumors and BS about Bloodborne, Nate. Like every year, you know, there's always a rumor that Bloodborne is coming. Bloodborne is coming. We haven't seen anything. There's really no smoke around it either. I know we, you know, I kind of disregarded Silent Hill for years as being fake or not real. But at least there was some smoke around Silent Hill too, right? Like we had some kind of rumblings that Blooper Team was doing something with Silent Hill 2. But Bloodborne, I mean, FromSoft has basically said has nothing to do with this. We can't talk about this. And obviously they're busy with other things at the moment. Look, yeah. I am hopeful we will see Bloodborne you know, re-emerge, but I don't know, Nate. What do you think about this?
It's definitely a very complicated situation. And as you had mentioned, Lance McDonald is probably the most informed individual regarding Bloodborne, and every time a rumor around Bloodborne begins to circulate, if Lance is on social media saying there is no truth to it, you can pretty much take that to the bank and treat that as gospel. And I know certain stances that he has put out there, he has kind of, I guess you could say, altered as he gets new information. Like, he was adamant that there was never a PC build even considered, and I believe it was a couple of years ago where he did stumble upon a Windows build of some kind.
Interesting. I didn't know about that, but doesn't surprise me.
Or some sort of PC build I think he had stumbled upon at some point. I may be misremembering. I'd have to go back. But there's always stuff around this game. I mean, what was it, last year or a year before, I believe there was a rumor that Bluepoint was working on Bloodborne for PlayStation 5, and that came from, it was like David Jaffe or Colin on Last Stand Media, I think, put that out there. And that's why people began to entertain it. But there doesn't seem to be any real momentum from Sony or FromSoft to do anything with the Bloodborne IP. And we know FromSoft is very busy working on a variety of other projects, be it Elden Ring, Armored Core, or anything else that they just want to do. They're just very busy working on other projects. So is it potentially a case that Sony just can't find a partner that would do Bloodborne justice? If FromSoft can't do it themselves, is FromSoft unwilling to sign off and give their blessing to someone else to do it? Is FromSoft just standing saying, if we don't do it, nobody does it? There could be so many possibilities of why this doesn't happen, but hopefully one day it does, or at least give us that 60 FPS patch on the PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Like, I think us at least that.
I think that's the real curious part about all this, because we've seen a lot of PS4, you know, 60 FPS patches or next-gen patches or whatever you want to call them show up for PS5. Obviously, we saw The Last of Us, Last of Us 2 before they got, you know, remade. We saw patches for, like, Ghost of Tsushima. We saw Uncharted patches. We haven't seen Bloodborne. We haven't seen The Order 1886 either. I want both of those.
If they could remaster a 1886, I'd buy it again on PlayStation 5.
Absolutely. Maybe there's some director's issues, there's some director's cut commentary or director's cut footage that never made the final product that they could, you know, bring into the game for some extra content. But if I could get that experience at, like, 60 FPS or 120 FPS at 4K or maybe 1440p, you know, for the 120. Oh, I would definitely double dip on that game.
Oh, yeah. And I don't care if Sony used it as a barometer to gauge interest in the IP, because that game ended on such a huge cliffhanger that I want the sequel, and we're never getting the sequel because Sony doesn't collaborate with the developer anymore because the developer got bought by Meta.
Yeah.
Yay.
Thanks, Zuckerberg.
Then had a dollar donation from Torkel. I was surprised to hear your optimism on Xbox in the questions episode. Microsoft might be fine, but hypothetically, if they stopped making Xbox hardware, the industry does indeed become a scary place, with Sony having total control over the console segment.
What about Nintendo, though? Are we just talking about consoles that you fit under your television in a living room?
I guess people always kind of put Microsoft and Sony as direct competitors, and Nintendo is just kind of off doing their own thing. Well, for whatever reason, Nintendo is never held as a direct competitor to these systems. And I'd say this probably started during the Wii generation when Microsoft came out saying, for the price of a 360 and a Wii, you know, you can get all these games and it still costs less than a PlayStation 3.
It's also,
and even with like the DS and such, like Sony was out there saying,
There's also the PC PSP market as well.
Right. That, it's always treated differently.
Yeah, there's the Steam, GOG, all these launches on the PC. But I mean, I get your point. Like if Sony did stop, you know, sorry, if Xbox did stop making hardware, Sony does, you know, take a victory lap in some sense, because, you know, that's their main kind of head-to-head competition. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Sony kind of, you know, has won the race at that point. It's really more along the lines of, well, they would have different focus, you know, things to focus on. And I would say PC would be their number one issue. Plus Xbox, if they did step away from hardware, which they won't, but let's say they did, you can bet that they would be putting their games and their Xbox, you know, operating system, whatever you call it, that launches Xbox games just about everywhere they could.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the real interesting thing, is that, like, yes, Sony in that case would have the majority of third-party exclusives, especially if Nintendo still refuses to compete from a power-wise perspective. But then if you're those third-party companies, you know you're not going to make enough just on that one platform, assuming the gaming industry doesn't just explode if PlayStation is that primary device where everyone rushes over to it. So you'd still have to supplement by going heavy on PC. So the adverse could happen where PC really becomes the primary platform for gamers, and the PlayStation 5 is now that secondary option for people, because if Sony is still bringing their games to PC and every third party has to go to PC now, the only reason they'd be exclusive third-party games on PlayStation at that point would they be timed exclusive, where Sony would be coming out to pay for them. But even then, they can only secure it for X amount of time before it would eventually go to PC. So it would be a very interesting gaming ecosystem if that were to happen. But at the same time, because it is just, you know, hypothetical, what if Nintendo came out with a system that is powerful enough to be one-to-one competitor with PlayStation at that point, and the whole, you know, environment sees a huge shift? But, you know, we know Microsoft is working on next generation hardware. So in this case, this hypothetical situation, we're at least 10 years away, if not more, from that ever becoming a reality, if it were to become a reality at all.
Yeah.
Then had a $5 donation from Jackie G. Howdy, fellas. How are you expecting a direct and showcase from Nintendo and Sony around the Summer Game Fest period this year, or do you think they will be later in the year, if at all?
No, I think, you know, we kind of touched on it tonight. We feel pretty good about something around that time, around that Summer Games Fest time. I think that's the move for most of these big publishers, hardware makers, that, you know, they take advantage of that time of the year to really kind of show what's going on. So I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, Sony will have something in the month of May, as they traditionally do. My bet would be on a PlayStation showcase, because I think Sony needs to begin to relay some information regarding their first-party studios. They can't do a state of play just focusing on their party. They really have to give some insight as to what their internal studios are up to. So a PlayStation Showcase in the month of May makes a lot of sense for me. And then Nintendo will be in June, you know, around Summer Games Fest, either be it that week or the week following. As we've seen in recent years, they really love to prioritize that later half of June, where they just have that week and that really that month, because not much follows in the month of July. They just have a long period where they are the focus, and really depending on how they approach June, as we discussed in this episode, that could be a good window for them to begin to roll out information, not just for their holiday lineup this year, but also some of their intended plans with the Switch too. But that's what I am expecting from those two companies in the next several weeks. And our final question for this episode, as we are breaking up the StreamLab questions, and we will have plenty to go over in the next episode, comes from Polaris, who donated $2 and writes, PlayStation VR 2 seems to be an utter failure despite the underlying hardware being very good. Surprised that Sony messed this up this badly. Absurd pricing and zero compelling games. Sony should know by now that this combo is a death knell for new hardware. You're absolutely right. Sony should know this. And I remember when PlayStation VR 2 was first revealed and detailed, I had expressed very strong skepticism, as Sony continues to release products in this vein where they are just not committed to it. They're committed for that launch window, the first 6 months or so, and then their commitment completely falls off if sales don't explode the way they hope to. And we've seen them repeat this time and time again with secondary features, be it the iToy, the Eye of Judgment, PlayStation VR 1, PlayStation Move. You can't have any confidence in a secondary piece of hardware Sony brings to the market because it's not their primary focus. And when you have strong development studios like Sucker Punch, Sony Santa Monica, Naughty Dog, not making games for PSVR 2, you really have to begin to question the commitment Sony has in the product itself. Now, yes, we have the rumors of an Astrobot game coming later this year. Could there be a chance it's both a PSVR 2 game with a traditional non-VR mode? Absolutely. That would be a smart avenue for Sony to explore, but it's also too little too late. Sony needed to invest in PSVR 2 over a year ago. They needed to get games like Half-Life Alyx out at launch. Yep. Horizon wasn't enough to really convince people of what PSVR 2 could do. The hardware is fantastic, but as you said, there's no compelling games, and Sony's done very little to alleviate that concern. Resident Evil Village, a nice PSVR 2 experiment. Resident Evil 4, another nice, you know, complimentary mode. But no one's going to make that their primary means of experiencing those games. And they haven't found any real captivating VR experiences to bring to the platform that would make you say, I need VR. I need to play that game. They just have those games that are like, oh, that's cool if I already own a VR 2 headset, which...
And not the vast majority, and no backward compatibility either, which I think was a huge miss from them. Because, look, we're not expecting, you know, PSVR games to be running at 4K at 120 frames per second, right? But there should have been at least some level of back compat where some of the older PSVR titles had their frame rate smoothened out just due to the nature of the PlayStation 5 hardware itself, and did offer, you know, the you to basically dip into your back catalog of games. Because I invested in PSVR. I have the headset of the original, and I have probably about 10 or so PSVR games, physical, and I have probably another five of those in my digital library. So I've definitely dabbled with PSVR before. I like Resident Evil 7. Was it 7? Was that the VR one on PS? Yeah, Resident Evil 7.
Yes.
That was fantastic. I've played Tetris Effect. I've played Rez. I've played some really great experiences on PSVR. I should be able to bring that forward. And that was definitely one of the reasons why I didn't reinvest in virtual reality again. It's like, I don't want to have to spend this much money on a system that I can't take my old games with me anyway and have some type of enhanced experience with. So, yeah, I think the omission of the backward compatibility side really also was a factor in this as well.
Yeah, they tried to quell some of those concerns by having select games. If you own something like Tetris Effect or Rez or Thumper, you could have got the PlayStation 5 PSVR 2 upgrade for like a $5 or $10 extra fee. But there's still a lot of games I play on PSVR 1 that doesn't have a PlayStation VR 2 version, like the Until Dawn on-rail shooter, Batman VR, two fantastic VR experiences that are trapped to PSVR 1 for, you know, really just no reason. And VR is always going to be just that, an afterthought.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is for Sony. It's, we have this cool technology. We can put this product out and we'll make some money on it. But the market is not responding well to VR, and it's largely due to the high price point and the less than compelling software and applications. So one day, maybe it will be the primary means in which we experience games. But until a development studio and a console manufacturer is just fully committed to that platform, it's just going to stay as an afterthought. Even products like the Meta Quest, it finds a little bit of an audience, but it's still not exploding onto the scene.
Right.
There's just not enough compelling stuff there. And even with breakout games like Beat Saber, fantastic VR experience, it's not enough. Not enough to go out there and buy a $400 or $500 headset for a $20 game.
Yep.
It just becomes that thing that you play for a month or two, and then it collects dust until maybe something exciting comes along. And at this point, I don't even know if it's worth Sony's time or energy to try to court a game like Half-Life Alyx to the platform, because I don't even think that's enough at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think the window has definitely closed on PSVR 2. I think this is something that I think Sony just needs to take the L on and move on as another piece of failed hardware on the pile of things that you mentioned, like the toy dog, the Aibo, and all the other things, the Xperia Play. And by the way, I love the Aibo and the Xperia Play. I'm not saying these things because I'm disregarding them.
They're just not a focus for Sony, and they never were.
The PSTV, the handheld,
PlayStation 3? What was the 3D monitor they put out?
Oh, I forgot what that was called. Yeah,
they didn't even like update it. The TV broke after like 3 months of use.
Yeah, there's also the Japanese PSX, the white thing that was the PlayStation 2 with the built-in DVR functionality and the TV tuner. Yep. Great piece of hardware. Thing would break down after 6 months and you couldn't replace the hard drive on it.
A lot of cool boutique items.
Mm-hmm. They never stopped innovating, and that's one thing I do like about Sony. Look, PSVR 2 is a failure, but I am very, very kind of encouraged that they haven't stopped trying to make new things. So, you know, ultimately the software side of the PSVR 2 was its downfall. And you could also argue the price as well was very, very expensive. But if they had the games behind it, like you said, if they had the Half-Life Alyx at that time, if they had the big VR experiences, maybe a couple of more exclusive games, or maybe, you know, something from a Naughty Dog or a Sucker Punch, things may have been different. But hey, here we are.
Yeah, unfortunately. That's our last Streamlabs question for this episode. We will have a new episode in the coming week where we will go through the remaining Streamlabs questions. But if you'd like to support the channel, we have a Streamlabs link in the description below. Donate any dollar amount, ask a question, we will answer it at the end of the episode. Donate $100 or more, we will dedicate the episode to you. With that, I'd like to thank MVG for joining me as always.
Always a pleasure, Nate. Thanks for having me.
Let us know your thoughts on the episode in the comment section below, and when you think Nintendo will officially give details regarding the Switch 2, when you think it will launch, and what the doomsday scenario is in your mind regarding the Switch 2. And until next time, continue to embrace the hate.